This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez recaps all of the back and forth so far in the attempt to acquire pharmaceutical company Perrigo. But first, as Governor Rick Snyder and leaders in the legislature start talking about fixing Michigan roads in the wake of voters rejecting a ballot proposal, some differences are emerging. The governor says he's willing to look at savings in other areas of the budget, but has also emphasized that generating the $1 billion or more needed for infrastructure will require some additional revenue. Republican leaders in the legislature seem resistant to a tax increase. We're going to talk about the differences within the Republican Party and the legislature in general with Western Michigan University political science professor Peter Wheelhauer. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Gordon.
So is this a very common Republican debate, the idea that if you want to get something done, you may have to compromise on some of your principles? And for Republicans, a big principle is not increasing taxes unless it's absolutely necessary.
Well, I think the notion in politics in general is if you want to get anything done, the nature of working in a legislature requires compromise. So you're always giving up to a certain extent on your principles. In this case, we're talking about the need to generate enough revenue to fix something that people universally agree needs to be fixed, that is our roads, but not having enough cash on hand to actually make that happen. The only solution seems to be coming up with the revenue because the costs are so high. That implies raising taxes. So the Republicans are really in a box, especially if they've made a commitment not to raise taxes as part of their party platforms or campaign promises, and now they're faced with a situation where they need the money.
Is the fact that there are business groups who are saying, look, we need better roads if we're going to have a vibrant economy in Michigan, does that give any political cover to someone who might be willing to then say, okay, I can vote for this increase in taxes or perhaps fees in order to have better roads so that therefore businesses can thrive?
I think that within the Republican Party, the business community does carry a lot of weight. On the other hand, the business community, when it comes to actually casting votes in an election, you know, they're only a small portion of the electorate. So the Republicans, as all parties have to do in different legislatures, have to manage this question of what is in the best interest of the state with what is going to give me political cover or is going to cost me at the ballot box. What can I justify? I think you could make the case that a small increase in taxes in a targeted way to generate enough revenue to fix the roads is very defensible. But it's clear that the effort to do so with the ballot measure from a few weeks ago was not adequate and not adequately sold to the public.
So Governor Snyder, if he's looking for some sort of a revenue increase, does he have to factor into that equation that he's going to need as many Democratic votes as he can get in both the House and Senate to make that work and then turn to his own party to get the rest?
I think it's very clear that if the governor wants to work with the legislature and get taxes through it, he has to have Democratic votes. There is a segment of Republicans who simply will not vote for a tax increase, period. And so the job of the speaker and the job of the governor is to come up with that handful of Republicans that are willing to vote for a tax increase, and then put that together and build a coalition with Democrats who are also willing to do that and are willing to hand the governor essentially a victory for the good of the state.
Is there an analogous issue for Democrats where it's very hard to get them to vote for X, even if it is at the end of the day the thing that leads to a compromise? We've seen, of course, Democrats oppose President Obama on trade authority. Is trade one of those issues where it's a flag that Democrats plant and say it's going to take a lot to move me off of this? An issue of principle, I guess.
Well, I think that this is a matter of internal politics within the party when we talk about the president. That's a very different dynamic than the kinds of things that we're facing here in this, at the state level. My general sense is that each governor is faced with a set of issues, and dealing with the political parties in the legislature requires navigating the specific issues that occur at that season of the state's history. So right now we're dealing with this roads issue. Last year, Indiana was dealing with this with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. In another state, in another year, they might be dealing with a big environmental disaster. So I think this varies from year to year, state to state. It's hard to predict in any coherent sense what the long-term issues are going to be. I do think that in this case, this question of the roads and their deterioration is going to be an ongoing perpetual problem until it gets fixed, until there's some kind of a compromise on both sides.
In the State House, Kevin Cotter has put forward the outline of a plan which would really not rely much on additional revenue. He says that he wants to find some pots of money, other parts of the budget. Governor Snyder's indicated that probably won't work. But let's look at the world for a moment through Kevin Cotter's lens. There's a pretty sizable number of Republicans in the House who, as you say, are not going to vote for a tax increase. So if you're Kevin Cotter and you assume that he wants to get something done, how tricky are those waters to navigate?
It seems to me that Speaker Carter's big problem is trying to work with his own party to build a coalition, and he's going to have to go across the aisle. I don't know exactly the number of votes that he'll need, but if it's a third or a half of the Republican caucus that's not willing to raise taxes, he really does have to find some Democratic votes. That makes for a very challenging position, especially in a legislature that has been kind of known to be fairly partisan over the last several years.
Kevin Cotter's had his own kind of internal battles. He banned Representative Cindy Gamrat of Plainwell from House Republican caucus meetings because of some posts that she put on Facebook, which he said shared internal, confidential type information, which should not have been made public. As we speak right now, she has not been readmitted to those meetings. Is it possible that Kevin Cotter was sending a bit of a message to rebellious type Republican representatives that he's there to get things done and that he's not interested in sort of petty squabbling and that sort of thing?
I think that he would say, I'm here to get things done and I'm not going to put up with petty squabbling. My sense is that from the other side, they're saying he is trying to maintain his own power as the head of the Republican Party in the legislature, and that means that he is not willing to work with people who are on the extreme end of the party. So as the speaker, he's got to manage this whole household. If you have a few people who are not willing to play by your rules, then he has to figure out how he's going to respond to that. It looks pretty clearly like he is playing hardball. As we know, he doesn't have very long as speaker. He has maybe 4 years at best as Speaker of the House. So he doesn't really have time to build careful, nuanced relationships with people who aren't on his side every step of the way. So I think it's pretty clear. He's playing hardball, trying to send the message, don't mess with me. We've just got to get stuff done. And if you're not going to play along by my rules, then I'm going to cut you off.
And is there some risk from that standpoint that, you know, the people who support Representative Gamrat say, hey, she went through a Republican primary and then was duly elected. Who is Kevin Cotter to say that she's not welcome at House Republican caucus meetings? I guess is there the danger of perhaps stirring up other people who then see him as part of the establishment and part of the problem?
I think within the legislators themselves, it could cut both ways. If you have a large number of people who are sympathetic to Cindy Gamrat's position and wish that they had done what she had done, then what Cotter did probably would scare them off from taking that, because that's a pretty big hit. If you're trying to work within your own party to be a voice for a minority position within the majority party, and all of a sudden you no longer have a voice in the meetings, then if you find that happens to somebody else, you don't want that to happen to you. And you're going to keep your mouth shut and you're going to play along a little bit more cooperatively. If he continues to work in a very hyper-partisan way, in which he's taking the very hard line with an increasing number of his own members, then he starts to have real problems in terms of just getting business done. If it's only a few members, that's not really a problem for him. The more and more members that get angry about that and get frustrated by that and start to act on that, the harder time he's going to have to manage his caucus.
Is that in part because he does have a pretty big majority in the House, that if there's a few people who decide not to vote with him, simply because there's a dispute over party leadership and those sort of things, that he can live with that because he doesn't really have to start going to the other side, to the Democrats for votes, until he loses a sizable number of Republicans.
Exactly. In terms of figuring out how to pass a bill, when you look at what he needs to pass a bill, he needs 50% plus one. That's how many votes he needs. And with a large majority in the House for the Republican Party, he's got some flexibility. He can sacrifice a few.
Does this issue of Rhodes perhaps set the table for what Governor Snyder may be dealing with for most of his second term, that there will be issues where he is on the opposite side from the legislature in his own party, the legislative leaders, or at least the majority of Republican lawmakers, issues such as prevailing wage, where he has said that he's opposed to repealing it and Republicans in the legislature are moving ahead on that. He has said that he wants any religious freedom bill, which is being debated to include protections against discrimination for gays and lesbians. It's not clear if that's ever going to make it through the legislature in that form. Could this be sort of normal for the next couple years, that Governor Snyder is having to work with a lot of Democrats and then some of the Republicans in his own party to get what he wants?
I think this is clearly the case, because when Rick Snyder was nominated to be the Republican nominee for governor, if you recall that election, he had a group of five pretty conservative competitors and Rick Snyder, who kind of pulled up the middle. And he basically won because the conservatives all split the vote. So now what happens with Rick Snyder's ideological position? We all know he is not a strident conservative. He's not a lifetime politician. He's a businessman, and he thinks in a very pragmatic way about politics. For good or ill, that's the lens through which he views Michigan politics and his job as governor, and he's made that very clear over the years. So then when he's faced with a legislature who has a much more overtly political tack, much more overtly political and party-oriented prism through which they view the world, he's got to manage that as well. So I think that he's positioned well to compromise with the Republicans and the Democrats in the legislature to get things done that he relentlessly sees as good for the state. But that's going to tick off some people on the right, and he's going to have some people on the far left who aren't going to agree with it either. What he needs to find is a governing majority in the middle within both chambers of the legislature.
And is his position to accomplish that helped by the fact that, one, he is in his second term, he can't run for another one as governor, and he is now ruled out running for the White House, so he will not be off to New Hampshire and Iowa, presumably, for long stretches of time? I mean, does that put him in a better position to be that sort of mediator?
I think the fact that he can't run for a third term, in this case, works to his advantage. In this sense that he can work with both parties across the aisle to get things done, and nobody really views that with suspicion as he's trying to leverage those outcomes to build a legacy to launch himself to the next political phase, especially at least in the short term. So I think that that works to his advantage. On the other hand, as with any governor who's in the last 2 years of his term, he's a lame duck. And so the problem that he's going to face is a sense that he doesn't have any future leverage or things that he can promise to people down the road in order to work with him. So his tools for getting things done are more constrained, but he's also freed up in terms of not having to be beholden to people over a long period of time.
Does that make the period between now and, say, the 2016 election, which is sort of the midterm for a governor, yep, they'll be electing new members to the state house then, does that make this stretch of time more important for him, perhaps the time when he can really get things done?
I think what he would argue is that it's always time to get things done.
And
that I think that he probably wouldn't look necessarily to the political calendar the way that pundits and junkies might. He's got to face the reality of the pressures that people who need to be reelected are facing. He's got to deal with that. It's just the realistic fact of dealing with the legislature. But I think that he genuinely has the opportunity to work across the aisle to get things done. And I think that's what we should expect to see.
Western Michigan University political science professor Peter Wielhauer, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
You can find links with more about proposals to fund road repair in Michigan at WMUK.org.